I'm here with Senator Lou Frederick, who represents North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon Legislature. Senator Frederick, talk about some of the bills relating to criminal justice reform and police accountability that you are sponsoring during this 2021 legislative session.
Well, thank you. There are a number of bills. I actually have 11 bills that specifically deal with police accountability issues and criminal justice issues. There's a whole slew of other bills in the session by many of my colleagues. In fact, if you take a look at the bills that are coming out of the Equity and Police Accountability Committee, as part of the subcommittee, as part of the Judiciary Committee in the House, you'll see 13 bills that specifically deal with those issues. And those are the House bills. They're not the Senate ones. So there are a number of other bills that are taking place. I think it's really fair to say that a significant portion of the bills that we're dealing with in the Oregon legislature this session deal with the question of police accountability. And that's not just a mere coincidence. That's by design. We have a number of people who are involved in things. My bills primarily deal with the issue of how we track and how we record and who gets to know the information about discipline of different folks, as well as how we train and support the public safety concepts that we want to see changed. I want to really look at understanding what we really want to see from public safety officers. Notice I didn't say law enforcement officers, because I think we really need to understand that there's a difference there. The semantics are important. I think we're changing from, as my fellow Senator James Manning puts it on a regular basis, we're changing from a system of warriors in public safety to guardians in public safety. And that's a philosophical change. It's a cultural change that's going to take a while, but we're starting to take some action along that approach. So that's what we're talking about with public safety. Police accountability is a huge part of that, obviously.
And another bill that you've signed on to is Senate Bill 571, and that would allow prisoners to vote in elections.
Well, we have a situation where, in fact, we have several places in the state of Oregon that have huge populations that are the prisoners. They have very little say in what goes on. They will be leaving those prisons. They don't stay in those prisons. They're going to be leaving those prisons. We need to have some concept of what it is they want to see happen when they get out and back into the community. I think this is a question of whether we look at their humanity and how they deal with the basic issues of their time, where they are, and their families. It basically says you can't have any impact on what's going on with your families, schools, et cetera. And we want to be able to make sure that they have a chance to do that. There are a number of bills like that that are brought up, not necessarily because we expect everyone to turn around and just say, yes, that's going to happen. So in many cases, this is the discussion we have not had, and it is time to have that discussion.
And of course, prisoners can vote here in Oregon as soon as they do release from prison.
Yes, and that's important. That's a very different situation than what we've seen in other places in the country. And that is by design. In many other places in the country, the reason that's the case is that they really disenfranchise folks after they had served their time. There's a very good documentary called The 13th, which if you haven't seen it, you should see it. I think it's a Netflix documentary, but it's a very good documentary that talks about the impact of the 13th Amendment on the system, especially on the African-American community. And that was, again, by design so that certain folks would not get a chance to vote to be full citizens. They would be kept forever in a quasi-slavery issue that came in after the interpretation of the 13th Amendment. So I think that that's one of the cases that you see in other parts of the country. Oregon has had for a long time a situation where prisoners, once they are released, they could vote. But I think it's time to look at what's happening with those folks as they're in prison as well.
So talk about what is being proposed in House Bill 2002. So that's the Justice Reinvestment 2021, Transforming Community Safety Policies Proposals. It converts mandatory minimum sentences for specified felonies other than murder to presumptive sentences. And there's protection against COVID outbreaks in the jail and prisons. It's talking about reinvest in community-based services, support for survivors.
The basis behind this bill is that we really need to understand what it is, how we're being effective in terms of the criminal justice system. Is the system primarily set up to be retaliatory, or are we actually trying to restore and recover folks within the system? And that's all of those aspects of that particular bill are attempts to try to deal with those issues. How we actually bring people back again into the community in an effective way. What is it that's taking place not only while they're incarcerated, but what takes place after they are incarcerated, and how do we address those folks then at that particular time? So that's what the basic concept behind the bill is. It has a lot of specific things. Not every one of those things is going to come through, but it's a comprehensive approach to dealing with with some of the issues that we've seen, where we've seen basically we're going to punish you for the rest of your life approach, and not understand just what kind of impact that has, not only on the individual, but on the communities that they come from.
Our mandatory minimum sentencing, especially Measure 11, was voted in by Oregonians in the mid-90s, then reaffirmed by Oregonians. Again, they voted a second time. And it's been hard to reform or repeal Measure 11. We did chip away at it a little bit with the Justice Reinvestment vote in 2013. Talk about what converting mandatory minimum sentencing laws to presumptive sentences. What does that mean?
Well, it basically means that there will be some discretion at the hands of the judges in terms of dealing with what the situation is for individual cases. That's what that basically means. And we did make some adjustments to Measure 11 in 2019. They were long overdue adjustments, but there's still more to do. In fact, I think you'll see coming out of the governor's criminal justice reform group, at least an effort to try to make much further adjustments. In fact, some relatively radical adjustments to that particular measure to try to deal with what we think is now effective or not effective. It's not a matter of, you know, whether we can do these kinds of things, but are they being effective in what we want them to do? So that's what this is about. The presumptive sentences versus a mandatory is a very simple concept. Again, it basically allows the judges to, and for that matter, the prosecutors, to take a better look at what's going to be effective for the individuals and individual situations, and change some of the approaches that we've seen after the Measure 11 has gone in for the last, well, it's almost 25 years now, 25, 30 years.
And Senator Frederick, you are a member of the Oregon BIPOC Caucus, and
yes,
this is the legislature's 12-member Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Caucus, and they have about 40 bills during this session. And can you talk about some of the legislation for police accountability and criminal justice reform that the BIPOC Caucus will introduce? Now, again, they have the Oregon Cannabis Equity Act, and restrict law enforcement use of munitions among some of their legislation that they will propose.
We have now gone from me being the only African American in the House, and Jackie Winters being the only African American in the Senate, to 12 members of the BIPOC Caucus. It's extraordinary. It's very helpful. We have introduced, and we are supporting, other bills that people have introduced, dealing with a range of things, everything, as you mentioned, from police munitions and what's being used there, to qualified immunity, which is a legal situation that allows police officers to not be felt that they are, in fact, responsible for what takes place on the streets. They can go back to the city or the county or the other jurisdiction will take care of that situation. And that's been a question in terms of whether that means that they then feel no responsibility for deaths or other aspects. There's also the Civilian Review Board. If you recall, we had an election, we had a ballot measure in Portland regarding the ability for the Civilian Review Boards to look at the discipline issues and to have a stronger understanding of what goes on. We have to adjust that so that it can be done, that the state has to adjust a few things in order to allow the city to actually do some of the plans that they have, were part of the measure. So we're going to be looking at that as well. And there are changes. I think the biggest change, in my view, is a much more longer range change. It's not going to happen right away, but we really need to look at how we recruit, train, and continue to upgrade the status and the education of police in the state, and how we track what's going on. So what we call the DPSST, which was essentially the Police Academy down in Salem, we're looking at changing their responsibilities and increasing their ability to really track what goes on and require certain levels of standards. So that's what we're going to be looking at as well. That's a larger package. It's going to take a longer time because we have to bring people in to understand what de-escalation really looks like and to support it on the street. But the DPSST changes are going to be really important.
Any other bills that you wanted to talk about?
The problem you have is that I have 50 plus bills that I've introduced as a chief sponsor, but the BIPOC caucus has a whole list and we will be putting those out. I think you'll see them again, but there are 10 different areas that we're looking at that include economic opportunity and education and transparency in government, environmental and climate justice, some of the healthcare issues, housing and home ownership. There's a long list of bills that the BIPOC caucus has put together. Individual members of the BIPOC caucus have particular things that we're interested in, whether it's dealing with housing or, in my case, dealing with science and how we approach those issues, workforce development, et cetera. So there are about 3,000 bills. The BIPOC caucus and a number of other folks have looked at that. I think that I would say that for a lot of the bills, it is a reset. It is saying, okay, we recognize that this virus has done a lot. It's shown us very clearly where there are problems, where people were talking about problems before when no one believed them. Now they see them very clearly. So how do we address not only the metro area, but also the rural communities that deal with some of the issues that are of the changing demographics? How do we address the concerns and the hopelessness that you see in Northeast Portland at times, and also in Klamath Falls and in Coos Bay? So we need to be able to look at all of those things. I think that's part of the whole effort that you'll see in the legislature, to look at what really took place because of the virus and address those particular issues as soon as we can.
Senator Frederick, thank you so much. For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.